Okay, good morning everyone, and as always, welcome to our Sunday morning shiur. Today's shiur is on a topic which I think is quite relevant, but at the same time is very hard to really get to the bottom of. So I did quite a bit of research and went through, I think, pretty much all the sources, all the sources in the Shas, where it comes up, or most of them, and I will do the best I can to represent this inyan as true to what I believe the halacha is. We find in yesterday's parasha, the Torah tells us, if you look at the sheet, the Torah tells us, "Vaydavar Hashem Moshe Lemer, Davar B'nei Yisrael, Amarta Oleam, Ani Hashem Elokeichem," that you should tell the Jewish people that I am Hashem. Kemasei Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Bo Lo Sa'asu. Do not imitate the actions of the people of Eretz Mitzrayim. Kemasei Eretz Kenan Asher Ani Mevi Eschem Shama Lo Sa'asu. Nor should you imitate the ways of the inhabitants of the land of Canaan. In other words, the Jewish people were going into Eretz Yisrael in the time of the Midbar. They were in between the two places where they lived, from Mitzrayim, Egypt, into Eretz Canaan. So the two civilizations, the two cultures that they encountered were Mitzrayim and Canaan. So the Mitzrayim they had already encountered, Canaan they were about to encounter. So Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed, tell them, do not do what they do. Do not imitate these people. Okay? Kemaiser, it's Canaan, Shani, maybe Eschem Shema, Losas, do not do what they do. Uvechukoseim, Losaylechu. Nor should you follow their chukim. Now, the word chukim, we know from the way it's used in other places in the Torah, that the word chok referred to practices that we do that we don't know the reason for. Certain practices, we have mitzvahs, for example, that we don't understand, the most famous of which is the mitzvah of Paraduma, which is the great paradoxical mitzvah that the Paraduma was the element, the key element in the laws of Tara that can purify a person. The red cow can purify, the ashes of a red cow can purify a person whose tameh meis. A person whose tameh wameis can be purified by being sprinkled with the ashes of the red cow, and yet the Kohen who is involved in the act of purifying the person becomes tameh. So therefore you have a paradox that this element has the ability to be mitaris atameim, that it can purify those who are impure, and mitameis atahorim, and yet it makes impure those who were previously pure. So this is a chok. We don't know the reason. So when the pasuk says of chukoseim will say lechu, so literally it would be translated that you should not follow in their ways, you should not follow in their laws. But it could also be interpreted to mean that you should not follow in the practices that they have where there's no clear reason. And in fact, Rashi here brings two interpretations. Rashi on the pasuk says that that the one pshat chukoseim oseleichu means dvarim a different interpretation of the word chok, dvarim hachakukim, that they have certain cultural practices, theater, stadiums, things like that, which is a different discussion how that applies today. But that's not what I wanted to focus on. Rashi brings the second pshat, Rameir Omer Elu Darkei HaAmori Shemanu Chachamim, that this is a reference to what's called Darkei HaAmori. Darkei HaAmori means the ways of the Amorites, the ways of the people who come from Amori. What does that refer to specifically? So we'll soon see. But we find also earlier in the Torah, in Sefer Shmos, that the pasuk tells us that similar idea, pasuk of Gimel, ki erech malachi lufanecha ve'viachol ha'amori v'achiti ha'priti ha'knani ha'chivi, that Hashem said that you're going to be brought into the Eretz Canaan, into the land of all these people. And notice that the Eretz Canaan, the first nation that's listed here, the Torah lists seven nations that six here that are the inhabitants of Eretz Canaan, but the very first ones mentioned are Amori. So the pasuk continues and says, "Lo sishtachave le'lohayim, you should not bow down to their gods. V'lo sa'avdem, you should not worship them. V'lo sa'asa kamaseihem, and do not follow their actions. Don't do the actions that these people do. Okay, whatever their practices are, you shouldn't follow. Okay, now just as an aside, you see here, this is the similar ideas expressed many times in the Torah and Sefer Devarim. Just from a perspective of Musar, one sees the tremendous influence of the surroundings that a person puts himself into. A person lives in a certain place, so whether we like it or not, we are influenced by the practices of the people who surround us. We have to try. The Torah tells us here that you have to try very hard not to do what they do, but one would think that, well, of course you shouldn't do what they do. You should do what the Torah says to do. So it's clear that what's being implied here is that it's very, very difficult when you live amongst people and you get settled. So their practices, somehow there's a certain osmosis, a certain psychological osmosis, that what they do, we begin to do also. So the Torah here is very strict that you should not do their actions, but it does not delineate what actions these refer to. Okay, Rashi earlier said it's what's called Dakei HaAmori, the ways of the Amorites. What are the ways of the Amorites? So we have here, if you go down to the bottom of the page, well, actually, before that, there's another pasuk which was also in the second parsha that we read yesterday in Kedoshim. The first pasuk cited was from Parshas Achrimos. And then we had in Parshas Kedoshim, it said, Lo Sochu Al Adam, which has its own interpretation, Lo Sinachashu, you should not indulge in sorcery. Lo Sinachashu, do not indulge in sorcery. Velosa onenu, and do not believe in lucky times. Meaning that a person should not indulge in sorcery, what that is, again, we'll soon see. Nor should a person believe in what we would typically think of as like superstitious beliefs, that there's a certain time, like this is a good time, or you know, now this particular moment, or sorcery. A person should not do these things. Now, what is referred to by this? So we have a Mishnah, Maseches Shabbos, on Daf Samach Zayin, that says as follows. The Mishnah here is discussing the laws of what a person is allowed to carry in the street on Shabbos. Now, by us, this is not an issue because we are fortunate to live in a place where there's an Erev, or in, I think wherever we come from here in the South Florida area, there is an Erev. So carrying on Shabbos is not something that we take into consideration. But we know that in a place where there is not an Erev, so that's one of the things the person not allowed to do on Shabbos would be to carry out in the street, to carry from his house to the street, or vice versa, or to even carry in the street. Right? A person not allowed to do these things. But the question comes up, what is considered carrying and what isn't? Right? So we know, in other words, for example, a person wearing a coat, so even if a person wearing a raincoat, even if it's not raining at the moment, that's not an issue, even if there would be no Erev, because of the fact that this is being worn as a garment. Certain things are acceptable. Then there are certain things which are questionable. Where they have jewelry, for example, was a big discussion in the Chazal because, for different reasons, concerns that a person may take it off in the street to show to somebody and then end up carrying it. The whole sugyas that we find in the Gemara Maseches Shabbos. So the Mishnah here tells us an amazing thing. The Mishnah here tells us Yotzin bebeitas achagel, that a person is allowed to walk out on Shabbos with a locust egg hanging around his neck. He has a necklace with the egg of a locust. Okay, now we know that locusts are actually, in fact, kosher from the permissible species that a person is allowed to eat, although today we pretty much don't know the misora. Some claim that they do, but whatever. But nevertheless, there are certain of these creatures that would be kosher. It doesn't really matter as far as this goes. A person is allowed to go out in the street with the egg of a locust being worn around his neck. Okay, why would one want to do that? Was this some ancient form of jewelry? So we'll see in a minute. The Mishnah continues and says, not only that, but you can go out b'shein shul, you can go out wearing a fox, the tooth of a fox. Okay, and it says, ubemasmer minatzolot, and a person is allowed to go out in the street with a nail that was used from a gallows on which they would hang people. Okay, they're pretty gruesome type of idea. So why would a person, in other words, what kind of mishugayim are we talking about over here? Right? In other words, who would? And here the Chachamim are saying you're allowed to do this. Right? You're allowed to go out in the street. Now, presumably, if you're allowed to wear this out into the street, it must have some value and it must have some benefit. So what are we talking about here? So the Mishnah proceeds to say, Mishum Refua, because these things can be valuable for Refua, that these things can have therapeutic value for healing purposes. Dizer Rav Meir, so says Rav Meir. The Chachamim Osrim, however, the rabbis, the consensus opinion was that this is forbidden, Ach Bechol, that not only would this be forbidden to wear on Shabbos, but a person would be forbidden to do this even in the weekdays, Mishum Darkei HaAmori, because of Darkei HaAmori. So here we have the reference, this is the connection to that Rashi. In other words, Rashi said there are practices that are banned, B'chukoseim Losei Lechu, because of Darkei HaAmori, the ways of the Amorites. So the Chachamim say, this is the ways of the Amorites. Now, what exactly is going on here? In other words, it seems we have a machlokas of Tanoim, you have a machlokas between Rav Meir, difference of opinion between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, and one opinion seems to hold that this has values, has benefits for refuah, and the others say this is Darkei HaAmori, which apparently, you see from this context, means it's superstition. And it's superstition, what, you're going to wear the tooth of a fox? What in the world is that going to do for you? So the Gemara proceeds to say, the Gemara says, Yotzim bebeitas achargol, the Avdi l'shichlo, the Gemara says. Avdi l'shichlo means that it was used for an earache, that this would heal for an earache, of a shen shel shual, the Avdi l'shinsa, and the tooth of a fox was used to cure sleeping problems. Okay, the chaya from a live fox, lemandanayim, was used as a means of keeping a person who tended to be drowsy to keep him awake. Okay, the primitive red bull. Okay, so today they have also named after an animal. Okay, so Dimesa Lamandalonayim, and from a dead fox would be used for a person who couldn't sleep. Okay, so if anyone has sleeping problems here, we have inside information. Okay, that go see if you can track this down. I'm sure somewhere online there's a market for everything. You could somewhere pick this up and let's see what happens. Okay, that's what the Gemara says over here. Uva masrim and atzol of the avdim yishum refuah, and the nail from the hanging gallows. So what was that for? Says the Gemara. Excuse me. The avdi lizirpa. Avdi lizirpa means that it was used to heal the swelling of a wound. Okay, so now, continues the Gemara, we have to see. Now we have to understand one thing. As a background to this Gemara and to many Gemaras in Masechet Shabbos, we have to understand that we believe, in other words, the practice of medicine has been going on for thousands of years. Baruch Hashem, in our time, there have been tremendous advances and in the scientific world, and come up with all kinds of medicines in all kinds of areas, and people, Baruch Hashem, have arichas yomim. A person can live today, even with a major illness, can live for many, many years, and all kinds of terrific things have happened. Now, but today is not the only era in the history of the world that medicine was practiced. Medicine was practiced all throughout the generations. Now we know that in the tradition of the Klal Yisrael, that there is a belief that there are things which heal, which are refuahs that are b'derech hateva. There are things that heal scientifically, and then there are things that heal b'derech skula. That there are certain things that heal in more of a supernatural way. Okay, the Gemara, for example, tells us that there used to be sefer refuahs, that there used to be a book of cures. There was a book of cures, and Chizkiyahu HaMelech actually hid it because he saw that people were relying on that. They were losing their faith in Hashem. They would just, that person would get sick and would not take it as any sort of message that he should perhaps fix his ways, perhaps he should become a little bit more focused in his life, but rather they would just immediately open up the book of refuahs and they would be healed. So this is before the modern medicine era. But there was such a thing called Sefer Refuahs. And we find in a lot of places, we are told, the Rishonim tell us that right after the Kriyas Yamsuf, that the Jews went to a place called Mara, and the Torah says there, Sham Samlo Choku Mishpat, the Pasuk tells us in Parshas Peshalot, Sham Samlo Choku Mishpat, that there Moshe Rabbeinu gave in front of the Jewish people Choku Mishpat. So Choku Mishpat means literally that they were given some of the mitzvahs in the Torah. For example, we know the Chazal tell us that the mitzvah of Shabbos was given in Mara. But if you look in the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Bachai in particular, Rabbeinu Bachai's commentary on the Chumash, he says that Choku Mishpat means different types of medicines, different types of therapeutic cures. That Choku Mishpat, that there was some that worked through the laws of nature, and some that were supernatural. And the pasuk actually concludes, if you're familiar with that pasuk, it says, "Sham samlo chokum mishpat," the last two words in the pasuk, "Visham nisohu," and there the Jewish people were tested. And Rabbeinu Bechaya proceeds to explain, because medicine is a test for a person, because after everything's said and done, a person is supposed to walk with God and believe that he, you know, if something happens to him, it's coming in a shamayim, and therefore he should try to get closer and use this opportunity to become closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam and so forth, to be more focused. But the advent of medicine makes it, if it's not, that we believe in the use of medicine. The Torah says clearly, "Virapo yirape," but at the same time, medicine brings with it a certain danger, and that is that a person could be free of God. What do I need God for? I don't have to do any sort of tshuva. I'll just take the pill. I'll take the medicine. I'll get this injection, and then all my problems will go away. So therefore, the Torah tells us, "Sham sam lo choku mishpat," that in that situation, when the Jews left Mitzrayim, they were given certain cures, but v'sham niso, but that would be a challenge for them. Because now that you have that, it's a challenge to balance that with your faith in God. It's a challenge to keep in mind that it's coming, min ha-shamayim. So good, we have a way, the derech ha-teva or whatever, we have a way that we could heal ourselves, or with the help of a doctor, we could get better. But nevertheless, a person has to always remember that. This is true when a person has any sort of medical situation, they have to realize that the doctor that they're going to is the Shliach Hashem. The Shliach Hashem, I once heard from an Adam Gadol that he said that when someone is ill, he gives them a bracha, that the doctor that they go to should be a good Shliach. That he should be, that was the traditional blessing that was given. That this doctor that you're going to, he's God's messenger. But you should remember that. He's God's Shliach. The doctor is God's Shliach. So you pray that he should be a worthy Shliach, that he should help you get better, but leave God in the equation. But with medicine, there's always that risk that a person could forget that and just say, "Well, I'll just take the medicine and you know, it's all fine and good, and I don't have to b'shmirus li b'elech, I'll just do what I want." So anyway, the point being that we find throughout the history of the Klal Yisrael that there were remedies that were given that had value, even though today you would say, "Well, it's preposterous, how in the world, scientifically it's absurd, how could this possibly help? It doesn't make any sense." So there were certain things that were remedies b'derech segula. And even amongst the Gentile nations, there were beliefs to this, you know, they didn't have Tylenol and Advil and all these things 1,000 years ago, but yet they had doctors. So people went, and there were different things that they attempted. Maybe some of them must have worked, because people went to doctors after all, right? So it must have been that there was a belief that it was helping, right? So the idea being that there were certain things that were known to be reforms in those times. To a certain extent, it could be also that there was Nishtana HaTeva, that the nature of the world changed, which sometimes we would say. But at the same time, there were also things that Goyim did that were pure superstition, that had no basis. It was just, you know, you do this, and you know, you jump up and down 5 times and spin around, and all of a sudden you'll feel better, or things like that. So the question is, so in this Mishnah, we have a little bit of a hard to understand Mishnah, because we have machlokas between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Rav Meir says that these things are permissible. On Shabbos, a person can even carry these items with him in the street because of the fact he could wear them, meaning he couldn't just carry them in his hand, but he could wear it, let's say, on a necklace or something like that, a bracelet. A person could wear these things, Rav Meir says, because they have some benefit. Whereas the Chachamim say that it's forbidden mishum tachei ha'mori. So the Gemara then, so with that in mind, the Gemara proceeds to say on the fourth line from the top at the end of the line, fifth line from the top, Abaye v'rova da'amri tavayu kol davar sheyesh bo mishum refua ein bo mishum tachei ha'mori. That anything that is mishum refua, anything that has a therapeutic basis is ein bo mishum tachei ha'mori. The fact that the Gentile nations practice this is not a problem. If it is mishum refuah, if it's going to help for refuah, then it's fine, right? But if not, if it's ein bo mishum refuah, that Ainbo, so the Gemara says, Ha Ainbo Mishum Rafua, Yeshba Mishum Dake Ha'amori. So the Gemara says that implies that if not, then it would be Dake Ha'amori. So the Gemara proceeds to challenge this, and it says that, Vehatanya, Iwan Shemeshu Peirosav, the Gemara speaks about a case of a tree that used to produce many fruit prematurely. The tree didn't produce fruit in the normal manner. And it would, the fruit would grow, but they wouldn't ripen, and it was not producing for the owner what he was hoping. So the Gemara says, Soklo Besikra Vetano Bavanim. You paint it red, and you put rocks on the branches. So the Gemara says, Bishlam Atano Bavanim. So I could understand why you put rocks on the branches. That was a means of sort of draining the strength from the branches so that the fruit should not be producing so quickly. Now, this was like the fruit were coming out very prematurely, so do something to the branches that will hold them down. So the Gemara says, that we understand. Erasopo Besikra, but paint the tree red. Why would you paint the tree red? My refuah covered. Right? What kind of refuah is that? This is a way to solve the problem with the tree that you painted red. So the Mefarshim say that what the Gemara is asking is that because this apparently was the practice of the Gentile nations, that when they had trees that weren't producing, they would paint it red. They would paint it red, and they had a superstitious belief that by doing that, the problems will be solved. So the Gemara says that here it says in the Mishnah, that here it says that in a Braisa, that that's what we should do also. So the Gemara answers and says, no, the Gemara says, the reason why you painted red is Kihechi, the Lachazi, Inshiv, Leboile, Rachme. The Gemara says, no, it's for a different reason. The reason why you painted red is that people should be called to people's attention, that they should see that this is a diseased tree, this is a tree that has problems, and they should be misfiled. They should be misfiled for the owner of the tree, that his tree should produce fruit. And the Gemara says, Kiditanya, just like we find in last week's Parsha of Tame Tame Yikra, that a person who became a Mitzora was supposed to go around, was supposed to say, Tame Tame, he's supposed to announce to people that I am Tame, says the Gemara, Tzarech Odil Tzaro L'Rabim, for Rabim Yivakshu of Rachamim. That the point of this is that he should notify people so that people should be misfollowed. So therefore, just like we find that by a mitzvah, says the Gemara, the same practice took place with the tree. That the trees that were diseased, that they were producing fruits prematurely, so called basikra, you paint it red. What is the point of painting it red? It's a superstitious practice that the Amorim, that the Gentiles used to do. Says the Gemara, that even though that's why they did it, but we have a different reason to do it. We paint it red so that it should be noticeable. Red is a color that attracts people's attention, so therefore people will see the tree and they will be misfowl to the owner of the tree that he should have his parnasa, that the tree should produce fruits for him as it is meant to. So this is the Gemara. So basically what is the Gemara comes out that there is an inyan of Dakar Ha'amori, but in other words, it seems from the Gemara the following. It seems that, number one, that the concept of Dakar Ha'amori refers to superstitious practices that the Goyim followed, that they had in their traditions or whatever, things that they did. In some situations, we have practices that were similar to that. So it's a little complicated here in the Rishonim, if one looks in the Rishonim exactly to define what's the Machlokas from Meir and the Chachamim. But it seems the Pshat which is brought in the Shulchan Aruch and the Hilchos Shabbos is that it's not on the sheet. The Shulchan Aruch says that anything which has a refuah component, anything that has a that could serve as a refuah b'derech segula, meaning that it could be in a what we would call supernatural form of refuah, which we accept that there are such things, that there are refuahs that we will soon see, with the exception of the Rambam, who did not accept such a belief, but pretty much everybody else in the Shulchan Aruch believed that there is such a thing, that there is such a thing that even though it has no scientific explanation for how this could work, but nevertheless there was a tradition that this could help. So essentially, what do you do? The Machlokas and Rameir and the Chachamim is, what do you do in a case where you have something which would work b'derech segula, but it happens to be that the non-Jews do this also, and they do it because of superstition. So the question is, are you allowed to do that or not? So Rav Meir said that the shita of Rav Meir is that it would be mutter because of the fact that you're not doing it because of superstition. Now, it's for a Jew to do something which has no basis, and just that the goyim do it, and it really it doesn't make any sense, and it's just a practice that they do. So that would be usur. That's what's called darkei ha'amori. That's what Rashi was referring to when he said b'chukoseim lo'osei leichu refers to darkei ha'amori. That it means that you're not, those things the Torah is telling you not allowed to do that. You're imitating Gentile practices that have no reason, no rhyme or reason to them. It's just the belief that if you do this, for some reason something's going to happen that a person's not allowed to do. The whole issue comes up, the machlokas here in the Mishnah, is what happens in a case where it really does have a value, but it happens to be that the goyim also do it for their own reason. So then there's a question, are you allowed to do it because you're doing it for the right reason? Or is there a chashash, or is the way the Rishon, many Rishon were in Pshat and the Chachamim, that it looks to the observer like you're also superstitious? What are you doing? You're following what they do. So that seems to be the machlokas over here. But this is at least one place that we see is discussed in the Mishnah and the Gemara, the concept of Darkei Ha'amori. Okay, now, continuing along, we'll just go through the sources in the Gemara. As many sources as we could find. Okay, we find, if you turn over the page, the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Samech Chesed Bei, says the following. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Menachesh. What is a Menachesh? Now remember, we had the pasuk in yesterday's Pasha, it's on the sheet. Lo Senachashu means you should not indulge in sorcery. What does it mean to indulge in sorcery? Says the Gemara, Zeh Omer, Pito Nofua Mipiv. A person who says, I was eating breakfast, and I put the bread into my mouth, and it fell out. Some reason, it didn't, I wasn't able to swallow it. I put the bread in my mouth, and it fell out. And this is a bad omen. This is a sign, that's it. Today, I'm not going into work. This is not the day to go into work, okay? Because I just see I'm going to just, you know, go back into bed, pull the covers over my head, and we'll try again tomorrow, right? This is a bad omen because the bread fell out of my mouth. Or makwa nafwa miyada, or I picked up a stick, and it fell out of my hands, all kinds of things. The Gemara proceeds to give a case that he sees a fox on his the left side of him, and he interprets that in some way. Says the Gemara that all another example on the third line, that where the person says Al Taskil be Shabbosu Shachrisu, where a person owes money. This is a good one for the Gabbaim and the Shul to know, that the person owes the dues to the Shul. So the Gabbai comes to him in the morning, right away in the morning, by Shachris, and says, maybe you should pay up what you owe to the Shul, your debts to the Shul. Yeah, so the person says, that's it. I can't pay you because it's going to be a bad omen. Because I'm starting my day with a loss of money, right? This is a line that you see, right? Even in today we haven't thought of this, but the Chazal, we're too well tuned into this, right? The person says, Al Taskel be, don't start collecting with me, it's a bad sign. Shachrisu, Rosh Chodeshu, right? Rosh Chodesh today, and Rosh Chodesh, you're coming, that I should pay up my obligations. That's going to be an omen for the whole month, it's going to be a terrible month. So the Gemara says that a person who says all of these things, that's called Menachesh. That's called a person who is practicing sorcery, and that a person cannot do. Now, with that in mind, we look at the next Gemara here in Chul and Sadi Ayamidays, okay, and the Gemara says something which would seem to contradict this. Because the Gemara says at the end of the top line, Tanya, the Gemara says, we weren't in a brayser, Rav Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Bayis Tinok V'Isha, when it comes to three things, when it comes to a person who just purchased a new home, or built a new home, Tinok, a person whose wife just gave birth to a baby, or Isha, a person who just got married, so Afal Pisha Ein Nichush Yesh Simen, that even though there is no nichush by such things, there is a simen. Now, what is this supposed to mean? So, Rashi explains, if you look at the side of the page, there's a Rashi Yesh Simen. He says the following. Yesh Simen Simona Ba'alma Havi Miha. That Rashi is really not a contradiction to the previous Gemara, but it seems it's a clarification of this concept. And that is that there is a basic distinction between what the Torah prohibits of Nichush and what's called a good Simen. Because the Gemara here is saying that if a person's wife just had a baby, if a person just got married, and then immediately after that he sees that he started out in a business and his business is doing well, so he has the right to take that as a simon that he's in a good way, things are going well. He just got married, had good fortune, they got married, and now his good fortune is carrying over, that he started in his business. So that is called a simon. The Gemara says that can be taken as a sign of good things. However, it's not nichush. It would not be a case of engaging in sorcery. Now, why not? So the explanation that's given is as follows. The explanation that's given is brought in the Rambam. If you look here, the Rambam on the bottom of the page. The Rambam in the Hilchos of Avodah Zarah, if we go all the way down to the Halacha Hay. So the Rambam says this over and says as follows. Misha Amar, Dira Zusha Banisi, Simin Tov Haisa Alai. A person who looks back at his life, he just built himself a new house, and now his business is prospering as well. And he says, you know, it must be that I got into a way of good fortune. I built a house, and that was the first good thing that happened to me, and obviously the good continued because now my business is doing well, right? Or he says, Ishu Zushan Asasi, or I married this woman, and now looking back, I see that that was the beginning of all kinds of great things that happened to me, okay? And Behema Zusha Kanisi, or business investment, and so forth. All these types of things. Kol, if you skip a few lines, says, Kol Eul Tiyosu Behen Mutter. These things are mutter to do. Why? Because Ho Velo Kivan Maisav Velo Nimna Milasos. Because the difference is as follows. The difference between what the Torah prohibits as sorcery and what we would say is a good simon, is a good sign, right, is whether you're planning your life based on it or whether you're just looking back in retrospect. In other words, for a person to say that, oh, I walked out of my house this morning and as soon as I walked out the door, I tripped. This is going to be a terrible day. And therefore, I was supposed to have a meeting, a big business meeting today, but I'm going to pick up my phone and call the other guy involved in the deal and cancel the meeting because of the fact that I tripped. This is a bad omen. Says the Gemara and the Rambam, that's nichush, that's usur. A person not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do that. That's called engaging in sorcery. That because there, you're taking what happened and basing a future decision exclusively on that. You're planning your future exclusively on that occurrence. That a person not allowed to do. That a person cannot do. That's called losa nachashu. That's called this is sorcery. What is this? But you know that's why you tripped. The person went into shul and the gabbai came over and said, you know, you had an aliyah on yontif and you still haven't paid it. You know, you bought the shira on Shvi Shal Pesach, you know, for $300 and then you haven't paid it. I said, oh, you gevalt, what a miserable way to start my day. Forget it. I'm canceling all my appointments. That's usur. That's losa nachashu. However, what a person could do is that a person could sometimes look back at things that happened and say that it looks to me like I'm in a good way now because a sequence of good things happened. I just got married and it seems that my fortunes have turned in a good way. Now all of a sudden I made a few good business deals. If you go back to the Gemara in Chulin here and higher up, so the Gemara says that this would have to be, if three good occurrences happen, then a person has the right to say that I'm in a good way, and I could take that into consideration. I am not allowed to exclusively use that as a basis for a decision that I make. For a person to say, I saw a black cat, oh my gosh, forget it, right? So that's that is usur. That's usur for a person to do. Because that's also not chashur. What, even if you think yourself that a black cat means, the goyim believe it stam because of who knows why, there's no real rhyme or reason to that. But for a person to say, I saw this disturbing thing, and it was the first thing I did this morning. The very first, as soon as I opened my eyes, something bad happened, and therefore it's going to be a bad day, and because of that, I'm going to abstain from what I was planning to do, is usur. That's also nachashu. Don't get involved in these things. How do you know why it happened? However, looking back, if a person has a business decision to make, and right now I want to know, should I expand my business, or maybe it's a risky thing, maybe it's not such a good time, maybe it is a good time, but I look back and say, you know, in the recent past, I've had a sequence of good events that have happened. Right, I got married, or I built a new house, or my wife had a baby, and since then I've had, several occurrences of good developments. So then, a person, that's what's called a simon. That, the Gemara says, that you're allowed to do. That you're allowed to do, meaning that not that that should be the entire basis for your decision, but if you're sort of weighing all the aspects of it, so a person does have the right to take a simon into account. And the Gemara says that the source for this is because Yaakov Avinu said when Yosef in Mitzrayim, right, so he took Shimon as they held him in prison and said that I will only release him when you bring Binyamin. So they went back to Yaakov Avinu and told him what happened. So the pasuk says that Yaakov said that if I send Binyamin and something happens, he said, well, actually, Yosef einenu, v'shimon einenu, v'es binyamin tikachu, that I lost already Yosef, and I lost Shimon, and now you're going to take Binyamin? If something should happen to him, alai hayu kulana, which the Gemara is interpreting to mean, then all kinds of bad things are going to happen to me. Meaning, not just the three tragedies that were listed, that he lost Yosef, that he lost Shimon, and now he may lose Binyamin, but he says, if that happens, then it's like a chazaka, then it's going to, my life is just going to be one catastrophe after the next. So says the Gemara, that you see from this, that Yaakov Avinu felt that there could be such a thing as a simon. In other words, certain times you have like a sign, like you're just looking back and look at what happened, and that a person could take as a simon, which could be taken into account. It could be taken into account, should not be the sole basis for a decision. Should not be that's what Rashi says, that's what the Rambam says. So the Rambam, going back to the Rambam, he says, where the person did not specifically chart out his course of action exclusively on this, and he didn't change what something that he had planned to do, but he just takes it looking back that it looks like good things are happening. So that's mutter. That's mutter. But otherwise, would be usur. Okay, so a little bit greater clarity we have now in terms of the idea of what's the Darchei Hamori. The Darchei Hamori, basically the way it's discussed, the way it's mentioned in the Poskim, is in the Shas and in the Poskim, are superstitious practices that the Goyim had. Okay, now in some cases they were linked to Avodah Zarah, which would be usur to follow those practices, obviously, because of reasons of Avodah Zarah. But even if not, right, if there was no rhyme or reason, if there was something that this is an omen, this is who knows what, this is I saw a black cat, or a certain this or that, and or if you do this type of thing, then your life will get better, and there's no known benefit. There is no known benefit, whether it's b'derech hateva or b'derech hasgura, whether it's not known in scientific means, or in even what in the Masorah of the Klal Yisrael, certain things could be in a supernatural sense that it defies the science, and yet it's a refuah. If it does not have those qualities, then it's Darchei Hamori. That's also to do. And you know, therefore, if Goyim have this thing, you know, whatever it may be, I didn't have a chance to check up on all the superstitious practices that are out there today. But I think we're familiar with different things. You don't walk under a ladder. Here, a good example. You don't walk under a ladder, I think, is one of them, Right? So now, so if a person doesn't want to walk under a ladder because he's afraid that the ladder may fall on him, is a legitimate chashash, then that, there's nothing wrong with that. You don't have, there's no mitzvah to walk under a ladder, right, if you think it's going to fall, right? So then you have, then you shouldn't walk under the ladder. But if there's a superstitious belief that you don't walk under ladders because it's a, who knows what, it's a bad omen, so there's usur for a person not to walk under the ladder for that reason. That's Rechukos Seim will say Leichu. The Torah is saying, don't imitate these people. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. Why are they doing this? There's no basis for this. What is it based on? So that type of thing is considered a superstition. Yes.
I have a sefer
called
Kemiyahu.
Oh, Kemiyahu, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, Kemiyahu, yes. Good. So it happens to...
Stay away from God without a sign.
What that? It says that there?
Yeah, when you come from the shul, if you see a black cat or rock, okay. Rock the other side.
All right, okay. You got me. I'm not familiar with that. It was written by a reputable source. Okay, I don't know. There are certain things the Gemara speaks about, commands in the Gemara. Speaks about amulets and things like that, because again, there were things. See, today, living in the highly scientific world that we live in, we cannot accept that anything should work that there's no scientific rational explanation for, right? That's one of the things that we have today, that if you can't explain it, then it doesn't exist, right? This is, you know, to some degree it's good, but to some degree it's not so good, right? In other words, that this idea that if it doesn't make rational sense, it can't be. We find in the Masorah of Klal Yisrael, we find in the Gemara, in the sources, in the Rishonim, that there were things that were schools. That was a segula. But the difference between a segula and a superstition, getting back to the title of the shir, the difference between a school and a superstition is that a superstition is something that the Goyim do that has no rhyme or reason. A segula has to have a rhyme and a reason, meaning that people make, you know, you can make your own segulas. You know, for example, I don't know, I don't want to start up with anybody here, but just take an example. If a florist makes a segula that before the chasana, a chasan should present his kala with 100 dozen roses. It's a segula, okay, right? It's a segula that he should become rich, right? It's a segula for the florist, right? No, that's a beautiful segula, right? So that type of segula is not a shtetl. Well, what kind of segula is that? Right? What's the source of that? But there are certain things that we have in our tradition that are segulas, that it was known over the generations that this thing had some sort of ability in some manner to help. Right, that we believe this, that there's an idea of a school. Okay, so even though it may appear in some cases, you say, well, what's going on? What's going on with this? You have to check it out. Is this a real school or is it not? Not every school that's passed off today is a school. You know what I'm saying? In other words, there are things that people today come and say that you have to really investigate. Where does this come from? Where does this come from? And at the same time, a person cannot be over reliant on a school because a school itself is not a ticket to heaven. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if a person does averus but wraps himself from top to bottom with the string from Kevir Rochel, which we'll soon get to, right? So he walks around like a red mummy, but meanwhile he's doing every averus in the Torah. So he says, "But I have the red string, so that's it, right? My passage to heaven, right?" So that's obviously absurd. In other words, the schools are not a tamura, they're not a trade-off for the observance of halacha. A person has to do the right thing and has to keep the mitzvahs. But is there such an idea that something could be a school? Yeah, there is, but you have to check it out. I remember, I think they still have, I've seen, when I first moved here, I remember seeing it in one of the local Judaica stores that they had car mezuzahs. That a person would affix to a mezuzah on the door of his car. So, and it's a schooler. What's a schooler for? You should have lower insurance rates, you shouldn't get into accidents, you get better miles per gallon. I don't know exactly what it's a schooler for. But this is Narishkeit. What kind of Narishkeit? This is nonsense. What is the source of such a thing? There's no... What's that?
What's a legitimate
schooler? So a legitimate schooler is a thing that... in other words, for example, we have... There's a discussion, if one looks in the wars of Yom Kippur, okay, so we have the minig, the beloved minig of Kaparis. before Yom Kippur. What's the practice of kaparis in its original form? That you take a chicken and you swing the chicken over your head and you say, Zeh chalifasi, zeh tmurasi, zeh kaparasi. This should be an atonement for my sins. So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Hilchus Yom Kippur, you will see that the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, said that this practice should be abolished. It should be abolished. And the reason is, he says, Darkei Amori, what superstition. The chicken is taking your sin? But the Ramah right there disagrees. And the Ramah says that no, that they have a Mesorah from the Gaonim. They had a Mesorah from the Gaonim, that the Gaonim who came before the time of the Rishonim, that they said there was validity to this, and therefore it could be done. Okay, so a difference of opinion. Now, so that there you have it. We can't understand that. How, you know, people like doing it because, you know, it's exciting and it's fun and you know, all kinds of things. But the fact of the matter is that it's hard to understand what that should do for anybody. Like, what does it help? Swing a chicken over your head.
Physical
right?
Therapy.
Well, I'm sorry?
Physical therapy.
Oh, there you go. Okay, right. They work on the fine motor skills. Right, but the reality is that type of thing is hard to understand. But they claim there's a source. You don't always have to understand what the source is, but there has to be a source. If there is no source, so then you get yourself into trouble, because especially in all generations, people attempted. There were always, you know, people who were, you know, charlatans who tried to pass things off, and they get away with it. And you know, I think that was the case with these car mezuzahs, which I wouldn't be surprised if they're still selling them somewhere, that you put on your car, which is total halachic nonsense to put a mezuzah on your car. But nevertheless, to the unwitting person, a person will buy it. Okay, so this is what we find pretty much in the Shulchan Aruch. I have had more time to go through the halachos here in Siman Kufayin test in the okay, the Shlussel and the Chawa, the Ki Chawa, which right after Shabbos, after Pesach, that's the school of Parnassa that was started by the dentist, right, that you bite into the Ki, right, and then it's a school of Parnassa, your teeth come out immediately, you fulfill what it says in the Haggadah, you knock out his teeth, right, so that type of, I don't know, if the people say that, if you have to check it out. I mean, it's widely practiced minhag. Today everyone loves doing these things because they're exotic, so, you know, why not? It's fun, you know. I'll be honest with you, my kids did it in my house too, and then they couldn't find which, they didn't hit it until Shalosh Shuddas. Until I came home from shul after Shabbos, and my daughter reported to me, we finally found the challah that had the key in it. They were disappointed. I kept cutting one after the next. Where's the key? Right? But the fact of the matter is that... Yes. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Rav Ginter, he said, if I wait to put my talis away,
yeah,
so after Havdalah,
this, yeah,
is the
school
for Parnassus.
Right.
No, if you run home and help your wife
clean up after Shabbos, school for Shalom Bayis. Shalom Bayis, right. Oh, okay, right. So there are certain things, in other words, the ideas of schools have been always with us, and I'm not trying to knock it. In other words, again, you have to know if there's a kaparis, so the Ashkenazim hold, and they bring even that Rizal said that kaparis is a tremendous thing that a person should do, and a person should definitely do with a chicken. You know, in the later generations, they tried to abolish that for other reasons, because the shechitas were not being done properly. But they had to process too many chickens before Yom Kippur, because the minhag was to give it to the poor people to eat before Yom Kippur. So the idea is that if there is such a concept of a davar de skula, that something could have a benefit, even if we don't necessarily understand what it is. Like I say, originally we find in the Chazal such things. You find the ideas that there were things that had what we would today call as a negative connotation, but we would call supernatural, right? That meaning that there was no scientific rational explanation, but nevertheless, there was a school. Things worked in the world. Not everything worked on rational science. Things worked other ways too, right? There are things in the world that we can't explain even today, right? So there are certain things, just the way it was. But you have to know if it's a school. But for a person to just simply make omens for himself, and especially if that omen is going to be channeled to the future, that's where you really get into trouble. That's where you have losa nachashu. To say that, oh, I when I got out of bed this morning, I stubbed my toe, or this happened, or that happened, or, you know, then, and therefore it's going to be a bad day. That's nonsense. That's nonsense. A person should not do that. A person should not do that. So I don't want to get into it so much, but it's a very interesting thing. The Rambam, as I mentioned earlier, there's a famous inyan here between the Rambam and the Gra. The Rambam in his Halachos of Avodah Zarah is on the previous page, and in other places in the Sefer Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam was very much into the rational thinking, and the Rambam said that if something does not have any sort of scientific explanation, then it does not. It does pretty much. It seems from the Rambam that he was not a believer in things unless you could prove that it worked. Meaning that not like today that you have to be able to prove scientifically that it could work. In other words, today a medication won't be approved until they can demonstrate why it would work. They won't let a human being take it unless they could show why it would work. Right, so the Rambam agreed that there were things that in the Gemara that were listed that were refuahs that we don't necessarily have today. But the Rambam held that all those things, they knew they were valid because they saw that it healed people. So therefore, it was proven to work. But if it's not proven to work and has no scientific explanation, so the Rambam was not in favor of that. The Rambam seemed to have held that those things weren't really refuahs. And the Bir HaGra is interesting if you want to see it. I'm not going to go into it now, but the Bir HaGra here, he very strongly takes issue with the Rambam and says that it's not true, that there are things that are mamish al yedei skula, that there's absolutely no explanation why. You find in many Rishonim that there were things always in the Masorah, the Klal Yisrael, that worked as refuahs, even though there's absolutely no possible way to explain scientifically what one thing should have to do with the other. And the Gra strongly criticized the Rambam for being such a rationalist. If you look here on the bottom, it's in very small print. Yeah.
What about the practice? It's pretty widely practiced. Like they put doves on the stomach.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah,
and it worked.
Yeah, so what does the Torah say about
it? Yeah, so that's brought down as a skula. That's brought in Sfarim. It's brought in, if you one looks in the Sefer Tamim and Hakim. I saw myself. I was the biggest cynic. When I was learning in Eretz Yisrael years ago, a friend of mine came down with hepatitis, a fellow in the yeshiva, and he was a little bit of a wise guy, so they were going to do this refuah with the pigeons, and he allowed people to watch. Nice guy, a little bit of an interesting fellow. So all the cynics in the yeshiva, I being the chairman of the committee, came in, and we decided that we're going to make sure, surely this Hasidic fellow who's carrying out this refuah must be killing the pigeons somehow with his hand or doing something underneath. So we had people positioned at every angle in the room. We had a guy lying on the floor, we had a guy who was sitting on top of it. We had every angle covered. He wasn't doing it. And the pigeons, one after the next, were dying. One after the next. And the fellow got better. Now, how do you explain that? I don't think there's a doctor in the world that could give an explanation, because there is no scientific explanation for that. So I think that this is one of the remaining things that we have of a refuah day skula. We have to realize also that as Hashem has, Ribbono Shel Olam has given in every generation refuahs for people. Right? People had refuahs years ago too. So sometimes, as certain types come in, old ones are removed. So something that worked supernaturally may not work anymore. It doesn't work. We don't merit that it should work. So now we have, but Baruch Hashem, it was replaced with physical science. In other words, now, with all the advances in science in the last 100 years, so now they can come up with some spectacular medicines that do things. So what they do years ago, so you say, well, everyone died. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. You had situations where people got better too. They got better. So how did that happen? I mean, probably not to the same degree that today. I'm sure not, right? If you ask the Social Security Administration, they'll tell you, right, that part of their tzaras is the fact that people are living longer today than they used to, right? But the fact of the matter is that there was always such a concept. There was always such a concept. I'm sorry, Robert, you want to say? And the bilirubin count went down.
One went from way elevated to down, okay.
There is a Masorah for that. I don't know. It's brought in the Sefer Tamim and Hagim. I could show it to you. It's brought in the Sefer Tamim. I don't know. Listen, it's very hard for us today to relate to this. But this is the Rambam was not a fan of this, and the Bir HaGra, he says that he criticized the Rambam that he was too connected to the Aristotle way of thinking, which is very rational, and of course the Rambam is the Rambam. I mean, he, you know, just because the Gra said that, we don't know what the Rambam would have responded, because he couldn't answer back, he wasn't living at that time. But no, nevertheless, this was a dispute that took place between the Rambam and the Gra. So therefore, what comes out is like this. So I think that what the Torah prohibits, mainly, are things that have absolutely nonsensical things, that there is no basis, there is no tradition, and to take, that's one thing the Torah bans. A second thing that the Torah bans is taking omens and going forward with them. In other words, taking an omen and saying that that's it, today I'm finished, I'm doomed today, this is terrible. Okay, those types of things are forbidden by the Torah. However, there is such a thing, as we saw, there is such a thing called a refuah segula. There is a thing which is a refuah yidei segula. There is also such a thing called a simen, right? The Gemara says, we didn't have a chance to cover it, but the Gemara says, if you look at the final page, the Gemara says in Brachos on Daf Nun Amud Beis, the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanim Amshichin Yayin B'tzinoros Lufnei Chosim V'Lufnei Kalo V'Zarkim Lufnei Mkloyos V'Gozim. That they used to, in the old times, when a chas and kal would get married, so they would pour wine, like, not pour it on the ground, because there's a question about tashkas, but they would pour wine, like, in a pipe. Wine would be flowing in front of the chassan and the kawa, and they would throw candy at them like we do today at a chassan, that they throw the bags, you know, that's very popular today. It even extends now to bar mitzvah boys, even though there's no real tradition for that, but, you know, again, the candy store owners made their own tradition, so we throw it at bar mitzvah boys, who knows, you throw it at all kinds of situations, throw it at the rabbi after he gives a good drush and start throwing bags at them. But the fact of the matter is, that this is also something, but this was also, there's also a concept called a simen tov. In other words, it should be a good sign, just like on Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, we have the practice that we eat, everyone knows the night of Rosh Hashanah, so we eat, we dip the apple in the honey, and we eat pomegranates, and all these kinds of things. So there too, there's a discussion, why is that not Madache Amori? Right, the Rishonim discussed this. It's based on the Gemara Masechet Torah, and the Rishonim asked, what is this? What kind of thing is this? What, you eat a pomegranate to say that we should have many merits? What? This is superstitious practices. So it's interesting that the Meiri on the Gemara there is on the previous page. So the Meiri says that you're not doing it for some superstition. But rather, there's an idea that you're saying that it's supposed to inspire a person. Okay, that the person is let's see, do we have it here? I don't think it made it onto the sheet. But the Miri says, in other words, that's why we're very machbid when we dip the apple in the honey, that we say the Yehi Ratzon. We say Yehi Ratzon Shetei Shana Tov Mitzvah, because it's supposed to inspire a person. It's not just it's a simen tov. There is such a thing as a simen tov, that if you do nice things, that it should be like, that's why you throw the candy at the chasen, or you pour the wine in front of the chasen and kara, that it should be. There is such a thing that just like now they're in such a good way that they should have a whole life like that. There is such a concept like that. That's not Darchei HaMori. But the idea is, you're not believing that because I did this, now his life is going to be great. Oh, I threw the bag at the chasen, I even hit him bullseye and knocked the hat off his head, right? The perfect shot, you get 10 extra bags if you do that, right? So now he's going to have a great life. That's ridiculous. The idea is that this is an idea of a simon. It should be a good simon for the person, and that's not superstition. And the same way that we do on Rosh Hashanah, and we say that hopefully this should be a good sign for us, but the Mishnah brings that when a person says those things, he should inspire himself to do tshuva. It's not just that you dip the apple in the honey and say, oh, that's it, all's going to be good for me, I'm going to have a great year because I had an apple and honey. Right? That's absurd. The point is that okay, there is a simen, there is such a thing, yeah, that I'm starting off my year in a sweet way, But I'm praying to God that together with my good deeds and together with the fact that I'm going to be improving myself, that this should be as a siman tov. So this is the idea in the halachic schools versus the superstitions. Now, just one last thing that may be a little controversial in the end of a controversial note, but the Kever Rachel strings are controversial, just so you should know. Okay, I saw brought down in a sefer, Rishon Zalman Orbach saw one of his grandchildren wearing one, and he immediately told the child, take it off your hand immediately. Okay, he would refuse to let the child do it. Now you'll say that based on what we've discussed, what should be so bad about that? If there is a basis for it, there is a basis for it. Now the truth is, what is the basis for it? And I saw a very interesting thing online. I couldn't check out the source fully, but I saw a very interesting thing that they say that in ancient times, there's a tradition that to ward off the ayin hara, you wear something red. Right, red wards off the evil eye. Why is that? So I saw a fascinating thing, because they say that in ancient times the red dye was extracted from a worm, and a worm is one of the lowest of the creatures. So they said that the reason why red wards off ayin hara is because if a person humbles himself, if a person makes himself humble, so then that's a schus. That's a big schus. A person is supposed to be an anav. A person is not supposed to go with gaiva for many reasons. So if a person goes with humility, so then good things will happen to them and they won't be affected by ayin hara. That's what I believe is the basis for it. In other words, that's what I saw. That's why the color red specifically. It's not just stam mishigas that the red. It's because there's a depth to it, because the red comes from the lowest of the creatures. And that sends a message to a person, be humble. Okay, that's what the Mekubalim say. Okay, now, however, I did see from people who are clearly not Mekubalim that it's brought down. I didn't have a chance to check this out, but the Tosefta and the Sefer Shabbos says that wearing a red string on a person's finger is a pagan practice, and they say further that there is a basis for it, even in there's a Mar Malcolm here, which I wouldn't put on the sheet because it's from the book of Matthew, so I didn't think that was appropriate to put on the Mar Malcolm sheet. But they say also where we find that the color red had a role in something in Christian belief. So when it has a basis in Avodah Zarah, it goes into a whole different league. In other words, that's not an issue of superstition anymore. In other words, if it was used for Avodah Zarah, then you have to stay away from it. Anyway, so I'm not saying one way or the other. There are two schools of thought. There are definitely people who are big believers. Sfardim, certainly, the Mekubalim, big believers in red, right? The people who sell the strings by Kever Rachel, also big believers in it, right? And the fact of the matter is that there are opponents to it. There are opponents to it. But whatever the case may be, a person should always remember to put these things in context. That a school is a school, it's not a ticket to heaven. In other words, if you do the right thing, this thing could enhance. If it's a school that's valid, that has tradition, that has a basis, so that could enhance. But there's no way that if a person is doing the wrong thing and he says, I wrapped a string, or I did this, or who knows what, or I dipped 100 apples into honey, or all these things, what is that going to help? What is that going to help? The main issue by a person is how he leads his life. So a school has a value, but we have to keep it in the context that it was intended for. Right? Today, people get so carried away with all these minhagim that you do all kinds of crazy things, but as long as you do this, so then you're okay. This is total nonsense. Even the people with the schools will tell you that. It's a school, but after everything's said and done, a person has to always try to do the right thing.